Anyam Home is a space where we can all engage about self-love, self-worth, relationships, trauma, and healing. I hope that you enjoy your stay, and I am your host, Tando. Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Anyam Home. I am particularly very excited about this episode because I am joined by my co-host. You guys are going to be meeting Linda today, and we're going to be speaking a lot about decentering romantic relationships in our lives, and also speaking about her theme for the year, because last week we were speaking about allowing good things to happen to you. And following on that train, I want to know from Linda what her theme for the year is. Hi, Linda. How are you?
Good morning. Good morning, Tando. Good morning, everyone. I think the way you greet everyone on your podcast is, hi, everyone.
Hi, everyone. I feel like that has become my signature greeting. Like, I tried doing something different, and I was like, no.
No, it's perfect. It's perfect.
How are you doing?
I'm very well, thanks. How are you?
I am very excited. I'm very good. I'm in good spirits. I've been in the greatest mood this entire year. I mean, it's only been 9 days, but it's been going really well. And it's surprising because January, most of the time, is a little bit shaky, but it has been going well. So I'm really just interested to know a little bit more about you. I'm sure the listeners want to know who you are, what you do, if they didn't listen to the previous episode. So can you do like an introduction that will set the tone for the rest of the year, essentially, who you are, so everyone can get to know you and what your theme for the year is?
Absolutely. Thank you so much just for the platform and for the opportunity to be a part of something so great. I'm just going to tell a small story of how I met you last year at Saturday Meetup, and you were just sitting there by yourself. And I saw you and I was like, no, I know that person. I listened to her podcast, and I just had to go and greet. I really, really had to go and greet. And then we spoke. I think it was in the kitchen, actually. We almost got kicked out because I had a fangirl moment, and then you got so excited and we were both kind of screaming. And the guys in the kitchen were like, excuse me, can you guys? My name is Linda, as you've mentioned. I have a platform that aims to destigmatize mental illness, to give people access to resources, and to also give people access to free therapy. So every once in a while, I will be way more consistent than I was last year. Mm-hmm. I host online therapy sessions. I'm looking to take that offline this year. But in essence, that's what I do. That is what I'm passionate about. I think that we all deserve help. We all deserve to be a part of a community in doing that. And we all deserve to just have the curiosity about ourselves and our mental health without the shame, without the judgment, because that makes it so much harder. I also believe in basic human rights, and your mental health care is healthcare. It's a basic human right, and you have the right to that. So because we've been in such a crisis in terms of our mental health, and all the big breakthroughs in mental health care are so recent, like 50 years, basically, like that's how recent some of the research and the biggest breakthroughs come in. We've got a long way to go in terms of learning about ourselves and each other. And so I just really, really feel passionate about that. And I want to be a part of that because it's that important.
And I'm really keen to also hop on to just helping other people through your platform, because I believe so much in what real art can do. And I just believe a lot in helping people and giving people the platform to essentially express themselves in a non-judgment space. So I really am keen to hop on to that, and also very, very keen to see the work that we can do through collaboration with many other people, because now the platform is open to other collaborations with other people who are in the similar field. But I'm also very keen to know about your theme.
Yes. Okay. So my theme for this wonderful year is continuation, to be honest with you. It's just picking up from where I left off. I had a good year. I really did. I had a good 2021. But at the end of the year, I had such a difficult time because some of the things that I didn't notice were happening, some of the things that I had struggled with, I had kind of unintentionally pushed aside, and then they caught up at the very end. And that's because everything else was just going so well. And so it's not about starting certain things over. It's about really continuing all the wonderful things that have begun and being able to take it all in. I also feel like it was such a fast year. It just went by so quickly at certain points that I wasn't necessarily stopping to absorb everything that was going on. I wasn't slowing down enough to really have a full appreciation, a critical appreciation. When I say critical, it's like the good and the bad of my own progress, professionally, academically, and in my own personal life. So this isn't necessarily a year for me to start anything over. I think that I just want to continue a lot of the things that I started, because I'm in a stage where it's not about starting again and doing new things. It's about continuing the things that I've started. Those are good enough. And if I'm patient, I think the rewards will be clear. And some of these things will take longer than just one Gregorian calendar year.
Yeah, it's funny that you actually say that, because I had a conversation with one of my mates about New Year's resolution and how everyone is just very optimistic to start over. And there's this idea that every single time the clock hits 12 o'clock on the first of every year, we have to start over. There's just this idea that we have been socialized to. You need to have your New Year's resolution, what you want to do for the year. And I essentially said that sometimes it's good to just continue with the goals that you already have, because you just reinforce those goals and ensuring that you do achieve those things. Because what happens to all the things that you had vision for the last year when you get into a new year? And so it's I think it's very important to also see continuation as something that is important. I do speak a lot about starting over and quitting, but also continuation can be the greatest thing that you take on in your life, because it allows you also to familiarize yourself with your vision again. You have the tools and you have the resources to approach those goals. But I wish you a good year again. I also had a really good 2021, so I'm really keen to see how 2022 is going to go. But before we go on and on, I would like to give you the space to just introduce our topic for today. So we are speaking about decentering romantic relationships in our lives, and I would like for you to just give us a little bit of background about where exactly this stems from and your perspective on romantic relationships being the center of our lives.
So in our personal lives, from when we are very, very young, we are sort of socialized to be very, very, very much interested, or rather consumed by, romantic relationships. It happens in the fairy tales that, you know, we grew up listening to, the movies we grew up watching. And we've always just been socialized with this idea that when we become adults, one of the biggest signifiers of you being a success, of you being happy and healthy, is your happily ever after. And that, of course, starts with a romantic relationship. So we've just grown up in a society where romance has a really, really huge role to play over our lives. For a lot of people, it determines how well they're doing. A lot of people, it determines, it can even break them, to the point that it breaks them. An entire year, somebody can tell you that they had a bad year because they were going through a breakup, or because they were lonely and they couldn't find someone. So we really just exist in a world where romance, there's a lot of pressure on finding romance and on being romantically involved. But I think that as we continue to grow and redefine what is really important for us, for ourselves, we need to actually look differently at romance. We need to start decentering romantic relationships from our lives, because a full life, a healthy life, has a number of pillars, and romance doesn't necessarily signify how healthy all your other pillars are doing. Every single thing counts. But romance, especially if you're not yet in a good space, shouldn't count as much. So we just want to have a conversation about how to decenter that and to explore really the roots of that. Where does that come from? Why are we so romance obsessed? And, you know, how do we shift? how do we make that shift from decentering romance to interacting healthily with the idea of romance and romantic relationships in our lives? So I'm going to start by asking you, Thando, where do you think the need for romantic companionship actually comes from?
Yeah, I think it's also important that we're having this conversation ahead of Valentine's Day, because what I have been seeing on social media are people already stressing about Valentine's Day and the idea around Valentine's Day. So who am I going to spend it with? What am I going to do? Am I going to get a gift? Should I already be preparing my outfit? But I'm not in a relationship, so who am I going to spend it with? So there's always been a fuss around the time of this year leading to Valentine's Day. And I think we are so romance obsessed to a point where every single time that we approach Valentine's Day, people feel the need to be in relationships to celebrate that that day. And I really do think you can celebrate Valentine's Day with your friends. I mean, yes, it is a day that is centered around lovers, but we're just socialized from growing up to believe in the idea that we need to end up in romantic settings and romantic relationships. And you can see it in children as well when we play house. I think it's still called house, where you're the mom, there's a dad, you know, you have kids. And so already unconsciously, we are telling kids that this is the setup that one day you need to work towards. And how often have you heard someone say, I thought I was going to be married by the age of 25, have kids, and just live in my house and just do big things within that setting in the marriage? So I think just from when we were growing up, we are socialized to believe in the idea of having a partnership with someone. But I also think as we grow up, social media reinforces that, because you see your mates, you see other people, and it exposes you to such a large space of information, because you're able to interact with people that are not in the same city, not in the same country, but in different parts of the world, and you see how they get treated, and you want that for yourself as well. And a lot of people choose to show you parts of their relationship that will make you yearn for that relationship. And so in you yearning for that relationship, you spend so much time wanting a romantic relationship, and you feel lonely when you do otherwise. So you always need to feel the rush from talking to someone or being with someone and going on dates. And once you start doing those things with yourself or your friends, you realize that a partner just is there to essentially heighten that experience, not be the starter and the initiator of that experience. So I really do think it stems a lot from us unconsciously treating children a certain way, exposing children to certain things. And also, like you said, the fairy tale stories that we grew up reading and listening to and being exposed to, if there could be a shift in that, I'm sure we will see a shift in the way that we grow up. And also social media does play such a big role. So it's important to disconnect from social media here and there and to focus your life on essentially what you want to do and what feels right to you, not because you see it happening so often that you feel like that is the right thing to do. But I know you had a different view on, you know, how romance plays like a role in our lives and in how we engage with other people. I don't know if that's the right approach, but I'm very interested to hear that.
So, I mean, first and foremost, I mean, if I were to answer or to think about where does this need for romantic companionship come from in the first place, I don't want to villainize the system completely. And I think obviously we're on the right path in terms of determining all the factors that contribute to our romance obsession. But inherently in us, there's a need for connection. Human beings, we love to be connected. We are wired for connection. We are wired for affection. We are wired for feeling close to each other. And unfortunately, depending on your background, and a lot of the time it's your family background and how you grew up in your family, for a lot of people, the first time they are prioritized, the first time they are given physical affection, you know, without a lot of boundaries, without a lot of conditions, is in romantic relationships. The first time you kind of feel a safety or a level of focus on care on you that is so specific that it can only be yours is in a romantic relationship, because of just the way our society has told us our other relationships can't do for us what our romantic relationship can. And that obviously, like I'm saying, it's important that we acknowledge that there's absolutely nothing wrong, by the way, with wanting that. It is so natural to want to be close and to be connected that I think the issue is that that need has been exploited, and it has been, we haven't necessarily been given the tools to healthily explore that. So I'm not anti-romance. I love romance.
So do you think, sorry to interrupt you on that, do you think that the media and the system plays on that desire for our companionship? So there is obviously the understanding that every person will at some point in their life desire companionship, and therefore they play on it. For example, again, I'm going to bring in Valentine's Day. During this time period, you'll see how companies and other places are going to want to sell us chocolates and roses and all of that. And they know it's because a lot of people want those gifts. So they're playing on that need to say, this is the day that we know is set aside for you to feel all this love. And we know you want it. So we're going to give it to you. Like, we know you want it. So there you go. So do you think the system plays on that need because there is an understanding that because of how we were raised, because of how we desire companionship, we will give into the rules of the system?
Exactly. So that's exactly why I mean that there's two tiers to every single, you know, societal problem. The first is on a system level where we're like, well, what is the larger system at play? And in this case, it's advertising, I suppose, or consumerism or capitalism. It's people selling us things and knowing that this month, I know I'm going to make a killing selling this. So we've got that as our broader problem. And then if we get more granular with it and we start to speak to each other at human level, it's being exploited. The fact that we want to be close to each other, the fact that we want to feel all of those feelings that they sell us in the imagery and in the way they promote the whole day to be like, I want that though. That is a nice feeling. Mm-hmm. So they sell you that feeling. And then on an individual level, I also want the feeling. So it's like we kind of corroborate or collaborate with them in the fantasy. And what's our responsibility to do is just to be aware of what's going on and how we want it to be and what it really means. Some of you might not like flowers. Some of you don't like chocolate. I'm not a fan of chocolate. I only like chocolate. Honestly, I only eat chocolate on my period, and that's probably my body's reaction to wanting more endorphins or something, you know? I don't want a white teddy bear, and I don't come for me, but I don't even like red roses. I like white roses maybe, or pink ones. you know what I mean? But you have the right to figure that out for yourself. You have the right to figure that out for yourself without necessarily the pressure of, you know, what's been sold to you as what it should be. And that's why my theory on decentering romance isn't necessarily just leaving you at saying, hey, decenter romance from your life. I'm not here saying that we should become shitty partners or that we should be kind of uninterested and unable, like people that we can't rely on in romantic relationships, or being half in, or, you know, shallow in your romantic settings. That's not what it means to decenter romance. Don't go and be a terrible partner to somebody because you think you're trying to decenter romance. What it means is that, for me, it means that the other relationships in your life are equally as important, or you have the power to give them that importance, but you have to do it. You have to do it. So you need to make sure that you're putting in effort into being a good friend as much as you want to have a good friend. You need to put in effort into having a relationship with yourself, in knowing what you like, in knowing what you don't like, in knowing what works for you and what really doesn't work for you. So does it really work for you to go out on the weekends and spend that much money? I know it's fun in the moment, but does that genuinely work for you? Maybe not. Maybe it doesn't help reduce your stress, and you would find that there's something else you prefer doing with that time and those resources. I remember last year, if I wasn't journaling in part of my to-do list to cook for my family at least twice that week, I wouldn't do it, right? And that's, I had to redirect my energy and efforts into making sure that I'm showing up as a good family member and I'm contributing, so that I'm not burdening one person with the task of giving everyone in the house nutrition. So it's that kind of a thing where it's okay if you kind of slip and get into your own thing and you forget. But there are other relationships in your life that require just as much attention. And there are other people in your life that you would benefit greatly from were you to pour into them and also invest in those interactions. So I wouldn't sit here and just say, decenter romance, don't think about romance, don't consume romantic content. Obviously, there needs to be control on that. But in order to really, really replace a bad habit, you probably need to start a good one. So start by making, sure that you're taking care of your other relationships too.
Yeah. And earlier you had mentioned that our background heavily influences how we show up in relationships. And I really do think in settings where you are not given as much love as you are currently exposed to, it builds a lot of attachment issues. And so I would like to also bring that in, because in decentering romantic relationships, you also have to understand your style of attachment to the person. Because in decentering, obviously, you need to let go of some of your bad habits. And in letting go of those, you need to know how you are attaching to the person and the habits. And I think the one thing that really, really helped me was understanding my attachment style. And so in understanding it, it is very easy for you to let go when you're no longer happy. And also looking back at the family structure and your background structure and your friends that you've had in your life, and understanding what it is that you lacked and what you didn't lack, will really, really help in navigating relationships, so that you don't spend so much time focusing on the one relationship. And one thing I have seen is we put so much effort into romantic relationships and we forget about our friendships. And only when we are not in relationships do we then focus on our friendships. And I really do think the attention should be split accordingly in all the relationships, because they all deserve the same amounts of attention and they all deserve to be nurtured and watered so that all of them can play the role that they need to play in your life. So understanding the attachment issues is very helpful in navigating the space that you will find yourself in, because I think that it is imperative for people to slow down as well, like slow down and understand yourself before you go into any relationship, because in that way you don't center every single thing that the person does for you to you in your life, because you have things that are going for you in your life already. And so that's what I wanted to essentially bring up. But I'm very keen to know, like, from your own personal experience, do you think that you would spend like a lot more time previously in nurturing like romantic relationships because of the role that they played? Because, you know, with romantic relationships, I know it's like a one-on-one thing. That person is your person, you are their person, and therefore the attention is a lot more. You feel a lot more intensity in that relationship. You see that person a lot more. You call that person a lot more. And so naturally they become the person that you do everything with.
My answer is quite interesting. I think I spent a lot of my earlier relationships being extremely avoidant and distant. I was just like, well, I like you, so I must stay far away from you, which is odd. This really just goes back into what we're speaking about in terms of how to, like, understanding your attachment style, understanding your background, understanding how you grew up, and knowing what your needs really are. So for me, that stemmed from me being such a distant and avoidant and a, you know what, it's fine, you can go at any given time. That was me honestly just trying to protect myself from feeling too disappointed and let down, because when I was growing up, I didn't necessarily always feel safe. As a child, I moved around a lot and I didn't live with my parents for like the first half of my life. So I didn't know who was staying and who was leaving. So my defense mechanism became, okay, anybody can go at any given time. So we don't need to be attaching too hard. We don't need to be breaking our own heart. So no, yes. I didn't spend my time nurturing romance. I didn't spend my time, like, I would have romantic connections and a word I would hear a lot, and I didn't have a lot of romantic relationships, but the few that I did, a word I would hear a lot was cold. And that would break my heart, because that's how I felt sometimes when I was younger. In my family structures, I felt like sometimes, you know, the people that I wanted more warmth from were kind of cold. And I wouldn't be able to express that. I don't want to be cold, you know. I want to be warmer. I want to be more welcoming.
And I want to be soft and gentle.
Mad.
Yeah.
I would get mad as hell. Like, how dare you call me cold? Like, you're mad. You don't even know. So for me, yeah, it was the complete opposite. And it's only now that I'm like, you know what? I want romance. And I want to be more loving. I want to be warmer. So it was really odd for me. I had to learn how to do a little bit, like, I had to learn life with a little bit more romance. Like, I had to make space to be, like, open to that experience. And my theory kind of became, you know what, maybe for this thing to be nice and to work out differently, maybe it still ends, the relationship is allowed to end, but for it to be nice while it lasts and to be impactful and for us to really enjoy it, maybe don't go in with so many walls and, you know, with so many T's and C's and with so much rigidity, you know, yeah, because honestly, I was just preparing to leave. I was honestly, yes, just preparing to leave. So for me, it's been the complete opposite. I've had to learn that romance isn't a bad thing. I know we are sometimes brought up with this idea that, hey, you know, stay away from, yeah, boys.
Yeah.
Books before boys.
Because you have boys a boyfriend bring
babies. Now, you're gonna be a bad child. You're going to get pregnant. So for me, I internalized a lot of the negative things that were told to us about dating and romance. And so, mm-hmm, I had to learn. It wasn't even my escape. It wasn't even my safe space. I had to literally learn to be like, it's actually okay. And me wanting to be close to someone and someone wanting to be close to me is not a bad thing. And we can figure it out and do our own, mm-hmm, thing and figure out how we want it to look.
Yeah. Which is actually interesting that you touched on how we are scared of relationships growing up. And if our parents were a lot more open and a lot more trusting with their experiences, we would have a better understanding of relationships because they know a lot. They've been through what we're going through. And so them trying to scare us off to prevent what they went through is actually just doing the opposite, because if you are telling me to stay away from it, I'm going to want to do it. Like, I'm a kid, right? You know how kids, when you say to them, don't do that, they do exactly what you say don't do.
Exactly.
So if parents are a lot more open and transparent and trying to guide us in the best possible way by telling us the truth, it would be so much easier to also approach them when we needed help, right? So when you are going through a breakup, usually you seek help from your friends and you seek help from the internet and you seek help from yourself. And the last people would be your parents, when they should be the first people, and they should be open to knowing about the relationship that you're in, because they will guide you. You know how they will always say this friend is a bad friend for you. They can already see it. So they can see that a partner is not good for you. So it would be really nice to see that shift. And I think it would allow for a lot of people to decenter relationships, because then they have that support and the love from the parents, and the parents are able to guide the kids in the right direction. But also, I think for me, since you have shared your experience, I think my attachment style has changed from being a very insecure type of attachment. I used to attach so insecurely to people because I felt as though I should always cling on to whatever it is that the person gave to me. Whatever little that they gave to me, I will cling on to it. And it became so unhealthy, because even when they were hurting me, or even when the relationship wasn't as healthy anymore, I stuck onto the relationship, because there were times when I felt really good in the relationship, and I hung on to those experiences. And it was so terrible. I would always have to remind myself, oh, but at least, you know, they call me once a week. When in essence, they should be calling me every single day. That idea of I will never find anything better than this, but when I look at what I do have, it's not even the best. It's not even close to being anything good for me. And so I had to really do a lot of internal work, because it stemmed a lot from internal insecurities and internal conflicts. And so it had very little to do with the other person. But I think obviously when people realize how insecure you are, they play on that. And that's the reason why they wouldn't leave you, because they know you will never leave. And therefore, I can give you bare minimum and you will stay. And so part of my varsity life, I really had to learn how to attach securely to people, which is something I think I've done successfully by just isolating myself and staying away. Like how you were saying, you've had very little romantic encounters, and I've had very little as well, but I've had a lot of talking stages. And the reason why I've had a lot of talking stages is because I started feeling more confident to say, no, this is not what I want, and leaving that as is. And so none of them went past the talking stage. And so now I attach very securely to people. When time is up, time is up. And it did take a lot of work. It did also take a lot of therapy, but I think it's something that was great to work towards because it also impacts the relationship that I have with myself. It's a very safe space. It's a very secure relationship because you can't possibly attach insecurity to people and expect to have a healthy relationship with yourself. So a lot of stuff really do start with self, and a lot of introspection will need to happen. It's hard. It is a daunting task to sit down with yourself because at that level, you need to be very honest with yourself. There's no one who's going to call you out and say, hey, listen, I don't think this is how you are meant to be doing this, or ABC, unless obviously you do have friends who care that much about you to be very honest with you in that moment. But usually it takes a lot of time for friends to also recognize the pattern. And therefore, by the time they do recognize it, a lot of damage has been done. So I guess now at the base of it is understanding who you are and how you show up in relationships and how you want people to show up in your relationships. But yeah, that's yeah. I guess
I love what you said though, because you've actually been very clear. So I like to put everything in a nice neat box. So we've touched on how your family is important. So you saying maybe you don't have a relationship where you can talk to your parents about that. I think most of the listeners are in their 20-something. So maybe if you don't have that kind of relationship, in decentering romantic relationships, now is the time to start trying to build that kind of a relationship and saying, hey, parents, shout out to y'all. You've done the best that you could. But, you know, I want to be able to talk to you about ABCDEFG. Maybe we can hang out once a month, or maybe we can, you know, you get to, you're empowered now to start putting more effort into that relationship and perhaps being heard in ways that you weren't earlier.
Yeah.
So that's one part you touched on. Then you touched on your friendships to say, well, some of your friends don't even know. It's, you know, they can't see the pattern in real time. So invest in being a friend that is also vulnerable and that is also showing up frequently and that is also involved, you know. And I know that with me, I always make, you know, the example, excuse me, I always make the example personal so that it doesn't sound like an attack. And we're all understanding of how life, it ebbs and it flows, and it's a cyclical seasonal thing. So I wasn't always a vulnerable friend. Like, I wouldn't necessarily speak about my deep experiences, you know, but sometimes I let somebody else speak and I'll be like, girl, I hear
you. Yeah.
But I'm not necessarily like giving that level of vulnerability in return. And now I'm starving myself of, you know, then a romantic relationship comes where you've got to be way more vulnerable. So you are, but then you have no one else to talk to in that way because you've never actually been giving it up like that, you know? And so it's that relationship with your friends and building real friendships and knowing that this is a good bond, this is a good person, this is a trustworthy person. And I can also then in turn be a good, trustworthy, safe space for them, and just being intentional and deliberate about that. And then obviously at the core of it all is relationship with self. You know, what am I really like? What do I really want? What am I really scared of? What are some of my terrible habits when it comes to interacting with other people? What am I good at? You know, so it's those things where it's like, okay, cool. We can all decenter romance as much as we want, but here's where we can actually focus our effort in doing so.
Yeah. And it's always good to have a starting point because it's terrifying when you go into something. Yes, you know you need to do this thing, but how do I navigate that? And I think you put it so nicely because then it's everything is layered. There's no one dimension to anything. And it's like an onion. I would look at it like an onion. Every single layer, there's a lot of work to be done. And this is where you start. And the more you peel off, the closer you are to the core. So it's very important to always have a starting point, and you'll start seeing and noticing a pattern whereby all the relationships that you have do pour into your life, and not only the romantic relationship, because when you focus so much of your attention on the romantic relationship, when it falls apart, everything else falls apart. When you focus on everything, at least you have something to cling on. And that's one thing I have noticed in my own life as well. When I started attaching securely to people, when one part falls off, I still have other parts that I can still work with. And even in my own life, I still have things that I do on a daily basis that hold me up. And so my recent breakups haven't been as hard as the first breakup that I had, you know. Mm. And that's because I now focus so much of my attention on my friends, my romantic relationship, myself, my goals, and every other thing in my life that makes me happy. And so when one thing falls apart, every other thing is still standing. So I think it is important to understand where all the parts are coming from to build the picture and to understand how they will fall apart when the one falls off. So it's like a domino effect. If you remove this one, which other parts are going to fall? If you remove this one, is every other thing still standing? So I think that is where we would end it, unless you want to add something. Or...
No, that's perfect. All these structures exist to complement each other and not to sort of keep, like, it should not be one thing that is keeping everything up. Everything should exist to complement the other thing. And it should be okay if something is a little bit in trouble. The other things should come in to help out and to support when that happens, not that they fall apart. So
yeah,
I think that's a good place to end.
Yeah, and I also imagine it as a, you know, I like hiking, and at some point, let's say in Cape Town, a lot of the trails have ladders, okay? So you'll climb up the ladder, and in climbing up the ladder, you can't do it alone. Someone has to go to the top to come, to kind of like give you support, so they will be pulling you from the top, and then someone from the bottom is making sure that you are going up. Should you fall, they will catch you, right? So I imagine it like that. Everyone is helping each other, so all these structures and systems in place should be working together to help your entire life essentially to go where you wanted to go. So that is where we would end it. We will continue again next week and the other weeks. Very excited. We have a lot to speak about, and I hope you guys found this episode insightful. But I'm going to give it over to you, Linda, for your last words, and you can close it off.
Okay, big task. But yeah, that's it. It's just about making sure that all of the relationships in your life complement and help each other and enhance. Your life is already beautiful, and the focus is on having a beautiful life regardless. Yeah. So in closing, it's not about necessarily giving unequal measures in unequal ways. It's about making sure that all the relationships we have are given the attention that they deserve, and the structures complement each other instead of affecting each other in a negative way should something happen. And things will happen because life is like that. So thank you so much for listening. I am so excited to be here, and I really, really hope to do amazing things and have incredible conversations that are impactful. I hope to learn from you as much as you can possibly learn from me. And until next week, goodbye.
Yeah. Goodbye. We love you. Bye, guys.
Love you. Bye.